Shalom, welcome to the Jewish Task Force, JTF. My name is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to a refuah shlema, complete recovery, for Sharon Katz, Shlomo Ben Sara, Malka Bat Allegra, Helen Friedman, Dorit Bat Sara, and Shifra Bat Sara, and to elevating the souls of Allegra Bat Rachel, Pesach Seh Ben Chava, Harav Meir Kahana, Yosef Ben Meir, Bari Hoffman, Dennis Shore, Ruven Hoffman, Robert Mittman, and Sipora Fegi Bat Liba. We have two subjects we want to discuss this week. One is how we believe in JTF that the lockdown is already now doing more harm than the virus itself, than the coronavirus itself. That the time has come to lift most of the restrictions in the lockdown, and the time has come to try to get back to life as normal as possible with, of course, caution. With, of course, the necessary caution. And we're going to discuss that in detail. But we're going to discuss how we believe that actually the health concerns of the general public are being more adversely affected at this point by the lockdown than the damage that's being done by the virus itself. We'll explain what we mean. And the second subject is the subject of the greatest enemy of the Jewish people and of the world at large, of justice and righteousness and truth. The greatest enemy is not evil. Evil, of course, is a terrible thing, but that's not the greatest enemy. The greatest enemy is apathy and indifference. Apathy and indifference. And selfishness. That's the greatest enemy, and we're going to explain how that has been proven over and over again throughout history, that apathy is our number one adversary, our number one problem in society, and our number one problem historically. But first, let's start by speaking about the coronavirus again. Obviously, that's the subject that's on the minds of everybody. We have no choice but to confront this, because all of us are affected by it. There's a lockdown in place still in the United States, in most American states, and I'm living in New York personally, and New York is probably the most restrictive and the most draconian of all the lockdown places, because we have communist leaders in this state. We have people who want to be dictators like Andrew Cuomo and like Bill de Blasio, the mayor, and Andrew Cuomo, the governor, who are absolute Bolsheviks in every respect, who are vicious, nasty, dictatorial, petty, evil people without an ounce of morals. And so, of course, the lockdown and the repercussions of the lockdown are greatest in New York. And, of course, New York is the epicenter of the virus. There's no question about that. And Cuomo and de Blasio are exploiting that to the utmost in order to continue to have power over people's lives. But first of all, let's understand something about the coronavirus. Now, of course, there's no question hundreds of thousands of people have lost their lives around the world. And this is a terrible tragedy, and it is a threat to public health. It is a real threat and a real problem that we have to deal with. When I go outside my home, I always wear a mask. I always wear gloves. I do try to keep social distancing as much as possible. I do socially distance. And the people around me do the same. So it's something that I take very seriously. And I think we have to continue to have social distancing until this problem is resolved. And the problem will not be completely resolved until the virus either goes away, burns itself out eventually, which happened with the Spanish flu, but that happened after 2 years of the Spanish flu, and after many millions of people around the world died, and it was a terrible, terrible, tragic consequences. It took 2 years for the Spanish flu and for other flus. But there also are viruses. There are viruses, of course, that don't go away. And so, we have to take flu shots, for instance, every year. The flu, we have mutations of the flu, and we have to take shots every year. So we don't know if it's going to burn itself out like the Spanish flu did, and or if it's going to continue to visit us on a regular basis. We don't know yet enough about it and what the course of this virus is going to be. But and so either it burns itself out eventually, or more likely, we're going to have to develop a virus, a vaccine that will prevent people from getting the virus. Just like you take shots for the flu, you take flu shots, you'll have to take shots for this. Or the shots, maybe the shots we take for the flu will cover this. I don't know how it's going to work. But a vaccine will eventually have to be developed to prevent people from getting infected, and or there'll have to be drugs developed that will kill the virus once somebody does get sick, once somebody does come down with the virus and test positive, and if that person has symptoms, they will have to take drugs, whatever drug or whatever combination of drugs is necessary in order to cure themselves. And so one way or another, something's going to have to happen. There's either going to have to be a medical solution that human beings are going to have to develop, or God will have to decide to burn this out eventually, one or the other. Until that happens, we are indeed still facing a serious threat and a serious pandemic. There's no question about that. And it is more serious than just the common flu or the common cold. It is a serious threat. But having said that, there are times when the cure can be worse than the virus. That is something that Donald Trump has said, and he didn't make that up. He got that quote from other people who have been saying that since this started. The cure sometimes can be worse than the virus. And this draconian lockdown that is taking place, where the entire economy is locked down, and where people are prisoners in their homes, and where all businesses are shut down, and where we have depression-level unemployment, and where the economy is literally on the verge of collapse because of this, that is something that is more harmful than the virus itself. Even the health consequences of the lockdown, even if we're worried just about saving lives, the health consequences of the lockdown, in my view, at this point, are more severe than the consequences of the virus itself. Why? When you have a lockdown, first of all, a number of things are happening. People are gaining weight. People are home. They're not exercising. They're gaining weight. They're not eating as healthy as they should be. People don't watch themselves as much as they should. That shouldn't be true. People should be exercising even in their homes. People should be eating only healthy food even in their homes. Even though sometimes it's harder to shop and get the healthy food you want as someone who eats healthy food and who believes in a healthy diet, and I believe in that zealously. I zealously want to follow a healthy diet. It's sometimes hard to find the things you want, but still, you should still only eat healthy food. You should not be eating unhealthy garbage and using the virus and the fact that we're locked down as an excuse. And you should not be gaining weight. And you should not be not doing your exercise. You should be doing as much exercise as before. And if you weren't doing before, this is a good time to start. You must do physical exercise. And you must eat healthy in order to survive. Eating unhealthy and not doing exercise and gaining weight, that kills far more people than this coronavirus could ever begin to kill. Far more people. Because the consequences of gaining weight and eating unhealthy and not doing exercise, the consequences eventually are heart disease and heart attacks and strokes and cancer. All of those diseases, all of those threats to our lives, which are the things that kill most people, which are the things that end up killing most of us in the end. Those are things that are heavily affected by what we do, by our behavior. Heavily affected by our behavior. Of course, heredity and other factors come into play. And by the way, getting aggravated, which is another thing we have, the tremendous aggravation. If you're going to be aggravated and upset, that can lead to high blood pressure, that can lead to all types of illnesses. Aggravation and psychosomatic illnesses. In other words, illnesses that are caused by people being upset or depressed or angry or whatever feelings come into your head because of this lockdown. That also adversely affects our health. In the end, billions, not millions, but billions of people will die from either heart disease or stroke or cancer or any of the big killers, diabetes, or any of the big killers that wind up killing most people. Most people don't just live to a very ripe old age and die a natural death. Most people die before the natural death age that they could have lived till, that they could have lived until. And of course there's some people that really do terrible things. They do smoking, which is absolute insanity, absolute suicide. There are people who smoke. There are people who drink excessively, who drink alcohol excessively. There are people who use drugs, and there are people who use opioids and addictive drugs. That certainly will kill you. And yes, marijuana is a drug. Marijuana is a narcotic, and it's very unhealthy. It's poison. It kills your brain cells, and it's poison. And it's a drug that causes hallucination, and it is a gateway drug that. For many people leads to other drugs that are even worse. Marijuana is also a drug, by the way. But if people are going to be gaining weight and not exercising and eating unhealthy food and eating the types of things and doing the types of things that lead to blocked arteries and that lead to heart attack and stroke and cancer and other illnesses, lo aleinu means it shouldn't be upon us, shelo neda, that we shouldn't know from it. If people are going to do those things that will lead to these terrible illnesses, chas v'chalila, God forbid, if people are going to do those things, that will kill off far more people than the virus could ever kill. Far more. And if it leads to bad habits, that will kill off far more people. And if people are aggravated, if people are upset and nervous and aggravated or depressed or whatever, whether they're depressed or angry or aggravated or all of the above, because this is not a happy time for most people. It's a happy time for Cuomo and de Blasio and the left. The left and the media are thrilled. They love this. The media is getting record ratings. The left hopes to bring down Donald Trump with this. They're thrilled. And not only that, there are so many stories about how wonderful this is because there's less pollution. Because people are not using electricity, and there's less pollution, and there's less people not using their cars, and the ozone layer, and all the other nonsense that we're hearing about. By the way, I'm doing this program, and it's almost mid-May. It's almost the middle of May, and it is freezing in New York and in the Northeast. Freezing. We have almost record-breaking cold weather. There actually is snowfall in parts of the Northeast in May. And you still have people talking about global warming. And they changed that to climate change because the global warming wasn't working because so many people saw so much cold weather in so many instances. Sometimes, of course, if you have a hot summer or a hot or warmer than usual winter, then they could say global warming. But then what if you have a cold winter, a cold summer, or a cold May like we have now? What are they going to say then? So they made it just climate change. Of course climate always changes. It's such baloney, such brazen propaganda and baloney, such junk science. And it's also intended to control people's lives. All of this climate change propaganda, it's baloney. But there are people who are they're on the left, they're thrilled that we're in this situation. They're actually enjoying this. They're actually happy that this is happening. Nancy Pelosi and Schmuck Schumer and and Andrew Cuomo and Bill de Blasio and Joe Biden, they never looked happier in their lives. They're just thrilled over this. And the media, the anchors of ABC, CBS, NBC, MSNBC, CNN, PBS, all the media people, and the websites for the big newspapers, which no longer print any newspaper. They really do very little printing of actual newspapers because nobody buys or reads newspapers anymore. Everybody goes online. But they're thrilled. They're actually happy this is happening, even though they pretend to be sad and it's so tragic and it's so obvious that they enjoy this and they're deliberately trying to whip up panic. They deliberately put down any attempt to find a cure. They ridicule any new medicine that comes forward. It's so obvious that they want this to go on as long as possible. They think this is wonderful. You know, the Green New Deal that they came out with, that the Democrats came out with, where they want to end people, they don't want people to use cars anymore, and they don't want people to, just a million crazy things that they came up with that would shut down basically modern civilization. The Green New Deal, that's what we have now. This is what life would be like under the Green New Deal, what we're having under the lockdown now. That's what Joe Biden and the Democrats eventually will gradually lead us towards. But putting that aside, putting the politics aside right now, because the types of things that the lockdown lead to, weight gain, lack of exercise, poor diet, aggravation, all the things that are all major factors in heart disease, in heart attacks, in strokes, in cancer, all major factors, because happier people live longer. People who exercise live longer, on average. There are always exceptions. There are always exceptions, and heredity does play a role. But generally speaking, if you take one group of people that do exercise and one group of people that just sit on the couch or just sit in front of their computer all day and don't do any exercise, don't really do what they're supposed to be doing. If you take people who exercise on a regular basis in a healthy and intelligent and balanced way and people who don't, the people who exercise are going to live longer, generally speaking. On average, they're going to live longer. The people who eat healthy are going to live longer than people who don't. People who don't are going to get clogged arteries and are going to have other problems that will lead to disease and to death. And so, again, this whole shutdown, even health-wise, is causing a serious problem. Very serious, that's worse than the virus itself. One other thing. If the economy collapses, God forbid, and the United States is on the brink of bankruptcy because of these giant bailouts that are taking place, these crazy bills that are being passed, these multi-trillion dollar bills being passed by Democrats and Republicans and by Trump. Trump is guilty of this as well. If this is what's going to happen and the economy collapses, what type of healthcare system are we going to have? If the economy collapses and we have chaos and economic depression, I guarantee you, you'll have much fewer opportunities for medical advances, much fewer opportunities for a healthcare system that can cope with viruses and can cope with disease. So in the end, we have to have a healthy economy in order to have a healthy society. If the economy collapses, we're not going to have a healthy society. And yes, people will use more drugs, and people, there are weak-minded people who will turn to drugs and alcohol and other escapes in order to try to deal with the depressing nature of this situation. You have weak people that will do things like that, and that is suicidal. I mean, more people will smoke, more people will use drugs, more people will use opiates, more people will drink excessively. It's just a fact. And in the end, the long-term effect of that will be that far more people will die as a result of the lockdown than would be the case, even if the lockdown is lifted, and even if it leads to more infection and more deaths to a certain degree, and by the way, there's no empirical evidence yet that the lockdown has been effective, that these lockdowns have been effective. Sweden has not had a lockdown, and their death rate and infection rate is lower than the death rates and infection rates of countries that have very severe lockdowns like Italy and France and Spain. Sweden didn't want to do it. And there's no proof that that they have suffered health-wise as a result of not having engaged in a lockdown. The Swedes decided not to do it. And if you look at states where there's a severe lockdown like New York versus states like Florida where there isn't, Florida has a much lower rate of infections, a much lower rate of death, much lower rate of hospitalizations and people on ventilators. All the statistics, all the things that you would look for to see how severe your problem is on a state-by-state basis, Florida is much better off than New York. Much better off. And so the time has come to lift the lockdowns. The time has come. That doesn't mean that we don't continue to race for a vaccine and push for a vaccine so that we'll have a cure for this. And it doesn't mean that we don't continue to do everything we can to develop medicines. In other words, to develop drugs that will kill the virus for people who do get infected and who are sick and who have symptoms. Of course, you have to continue to push for a medical answer and a medical solution. That you do nonstop. That you do with everything you got. You've got to push for a medical solution and a medical answer. And also, again, there should be, the world is not the way it was before the virus. That's true. That is true. That is very true. We've got to be concerned. I think it is sensible to wear masks when you're out in public. I think it is sensible to have social distancing. I think it is sensible to wear gloves. I think it is sensible to wash your hands and not have huge crowds until this problem is over. I think there are measures that can be taken that are sensible and balanced and sane without going insane, without closing down most of the economy. Most economy should be reopened. The vast majority of businesses, they should be allowed to reopen with rules and guidelines to try to limit the danger involved here, the danger of infection and the danger of people getting sick. But that should happen. Even left-wing California is starting to open up. Even that communist state of California, which is run entirely by left-wing Democrats, more than two-thirds of the state legislature are Democrats. Both houses of the state legislature in California, more than two-thirds of their legislators are Democrats. And the governor, of course, is a Democrat, and every statewide official is a Democrat. No Republican can get elected to anything statewide in California anymore. The state is so Democrat. And yet even they are beginning to open up, but New York, New Jersey, no. Not yet, at least. So these crippling restrictions and lockdowns, I think it's already having a detrimental effect on our health, on our well-being, and certainly on the economy. And I think it should end. And again, the mentality of the left is a mentality of deliberately trying to restrict and have as much control as you can over people's lives. That's the mentality. And that is what they want society to become. What we have in the lockdown is what they want society to eventually become, a society where we're completely under control. We're completely controlled by the government and by Big Brother and by the media. They want a society like that. They want to move us toward a society like that. And I think the time has come for this to come to an end in most segments, in most sectors of the economy. And I think that, you know, even Cuomo and de Blasio will be under increasing pressure because there's a limit to how much people can put up with this. You see even in California that even in left-wing California that people in California are rebelling against this. So it's something that is happening. And I don't agree with everything that the people who are protesting say or do. The fact that they're willing to throw out all restrictions and allow any and say no more social distancing and no more, that I think is a mistake. I think we have to do it sensibly, and there we do have to listen to science, and we do have to listen to doctors and experts. But a lot of the doctors and experts would agree with what I'm saying now, that the lockdown itself is not proving as effective against the virus as it could be. It's not. There's no proof that it's effective. And the consequences of this are really, really devastating on society. Anyway, that's our view on the lockdown at this stage. I want to speak about one other thing this week, and that is the subject of what is the greatest enemy we face? Because we speak about a lot of our enemies. We speak about the Muslim Nazis that believe in a religion that all non-Muslim infidels must be exterminated and the entire world must be conquered under Allah. That's what Islam teaches, by the way. That's true Islam. True Islam and the Islam of the Quran and the Hadith, the true Islam, the Islam that Muhammad, the founder of Islam, preached, is an Islam of the sword, is an Islam of world conquest. All the world must be under Islamic control. That's true Islam. And so we have the Muslim Nazis who believe in a religion that really is evil. And we have many other Nazis and black anti-Semites and black Jew haters, vicious, vicious people who are turned into heroes by the media now. You have a lot of evil, vicious people in the world. There is a lot of evil and immorality. But the average person does not wake up in the morning and say, you know, I want to perpetrate a Holocaust, and I want... The average person is just apathetic, doesn't care. The number one enemy of the Jewish people and our mission in this world as a light unto the nations and a holy nation, a nation of priests, the number one enemy is not evil, not even the self-hating Jews. They're not the number one enemy. The number one enemy for the Jewish people, the self-hating Jews, they are really a horrific fifth column that does horrible damage to us. But our number one enemy is apathy and indifference. Silence and apathy and indifference, that's the number one enemy. If there hadn't been silence and apathy and indifference during the Holocaust, there would not have been a Holocaust. If there hadn't been silence and apathy and indifference during the more than 50 years that Soviet Jews were trapped behind the Iron Curtain, and we lost millions of Soviet Jews assimilated and left the Jewish people. If we had not had that apathy and indifference, Soviet Jews would have been freed a lot sooner. And we would have had a whole different situation here. Without apathy and indifference, if people cared about the future of the world and about their fellow human beings, if people cared about what happens to make this a better world and to contribute to the world, if people really cared and were willing to do things to make this a better world, we'd have the final redemption. We would have HaGeulah HaShlema VeHaSofit, the final and complete redemption that all the prophets of the Bible speak to us about. It's when people see evil and see the most monstrous things and do nothing about it, or do very little about it. That is our number one problem. That is our number one enemy. Among the Jews, we have Jewish leaders who have committed the worst acts of treason. And even the Jews who know that these things are bad are apathetic and indifferent. You know, we see right now, there is a freeze on all Jewish buildings in Judea, Samaria, and Jerusalem. Netanyahu speaks about annexing this and annexing that. Jerusalem was annexed in 1967, and yet Jews are still not allowed to build there, just because they're Jews. The Golan Heights was annexed in 1981. There is a building freeze in certain areas of Israel, if there are areas that Israel might eventually surrender, God forbid. Netanyahu, the big right-winger that everybody thinks is a right-winger, has imposed this building freeze, and no one speaks up about it. No one cares. No one speaks up about it. JTF does. JTF, as you know, has an advertising campaign in Israel where we try to wake people up and we're trying to alert people to the terrible things that are happening under Netanyahu, under the Likud, under the phony right government. And now we're going to have a coalition government between the phony right and the open left. And the whole thing is just a complete farce. But the reality is apathy and indifference, those are our great enemies. We had a chance when our great leader, Harav Meir David Kahana, Zecher Tzadik VeKadosh Livracha, Hashem Yikom Damo, when our great leader, Rabbi Meir Kahana, of blessed memory, may God avenge his blood, when he was on the verge of getting 12 to 14 seats in the Knesset elections in 1988, and they banned him and barred him from running. Most Israeli Jews did not agree with that decision. Most Israeli Jews saw how dirty that was and realized how bad that was. And yet, they didn't act. When Rabbi Kahana tried to organize mass protests against it and even rented buses, the buses were almost empty. People disagreed with it. If you spoke to the average Israeli at the time, they would tell you, yeah, this is wrong, this is unjust. Of course, there was a lot of people who are scum, who favor banning Rabbi Kahana, who are just scum. I mean, those people are scum. Okay, they're self-hating Jewish scum. They're Judenrat, they're kapos. But I'm not speaking about the scum that were in favor of banning Rabbi Kahana, including Geula Cohen, Yimach Shma V'Zichra, Shem Reshaim Yirkav, and her evil son now, who supported the expulsion of Jews from Gush Katif, and who supports the Arab Nazis in the Knesset, and supports every evil thing under the sun, but Rabbi Kahana, he wanted to ban. I'm not speaking about those vile individuals. I'm speaking about the majority of Israelis, a large minority again, were in favor of banning Rabbi Kahana, but the majority were against it. The majority thought that this was unjust, that they were singling him out unfairly and there was a double standard. The Arab Nazis call for the destruction of the Jewish people and call for pushing the Jews into the sea and support every Arab terrorist attack against Jewish men, women, and children. They support Hezbollah and Hamas, and there was no Hezbollah, there was no Hamas at the time, but there was Fatah and the PLO slaughtering innocent Jews, and the Arab members of the Knesset were applauding it and agreeing with it and justifying it and calling for the destruction of Israel. They were allowed to run. They weren't racist. But Rabbi Kahana, just because he said that we should encourage the Arabs to leave Israel, he was called a racist. And because he said he was against intermarriage, which the Bible and Judaism and the Torah say you're not allowed to do, he was called a racist and was banned for that from running for the Knesset. And almost all the religious Jews in Israel knew that was unjust. And most Israeli Jews knew that was unjust. Certainly the Sephardic Jews, who were almost half the population in Israel, they knew that was unjust. They saw all the injustice, but they were apathetic and indifferent and didn't want to protest, and they're busy with their own little lives. If someone's selling falafel, he's worried about how much falafel he's going to sell and not about the future of the world and and injustice. That's very bad. Very bad. I'm not saying that you don't continue to work and carry on with your life and you don't support your family. You should support your family. And you have to continue to work, and you have to make a living, and you have to worry about the things in your own lives. But you also must make an important part of your life, changing the world and making this a better world. Otherwise, everything else you're doing will have very little value in the end. Because if you're silent in the face of evil, then you are evil. If you're silent in the face of immorality, then you are immoral. If you're silent in the face of mass murder, then you are an accessory to mass murder. American Jews saw 6 million Jews being murdered and did nothing. Not only did nothing, but voted for Franklin Delano Roosevelt, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro, who was deliberately doing everything he can to enable the Germans to continue the Holocaust. If the United States had bombed the rail lines leading to Auschwitz, had destroyed the death camps, the U.S. Air Force had complete mastery over Europe's skies, if they had done this, there wouldn't have been the Holocaust would have been stopped dead in its tracks. The German mass murder machinery would have been stopped dead in its tracks. American Jewish leaders knew about this and did nothing. They did the opposite. In fact, when there were activists like Ben Hecht who were trying, Peter Berkson and Ben Hecht right-wing Jabotinsky Jews who were trying to wake people up and trying to save the Jews. They did everything they could to sabotage the rescue efforts, to sabotage any rescue. That's the Jewish establishment. Evil, traitors, scum. Okay? They should burn in hell together with Hitler and Goebbels and all the German Nazis because they are Jewish Nazis. Okay? Jewish leaders that did things like that are collaborators with the Nazis. But the average Jew in America, he didn't want 6 million Jews to be murdered. He didn't want to see the Jews, millions of Jews being murdered, but it wasn't important enough to him or to her to actually do something about it, to actually join with Peter Bergson and Ben Hecht and do something to save the Jews. It wasn't important enough. Or they didn't have the guts to do it, whatever the reason was. Now, what guts did it take in America to protest against what's happening to the Jews compared to what was happening to their brothers and sisters in Europe? What was the big sacrifice they'd have to make if they at least protested and did what they could to try to stop this? It wasn't important enough. It wasn't important enough for them to raise their voices. Therefore, they have the blood of 6 million Jews on their hands. Everyone who was part of that silence, everyone who was part of that indifference, all the people who voted for Roosevelt knowing that he was murdering millions of Jews in Europe with his policies, they are all guilty as well. Just as the German Nazis are murdering 6 million Jews. Our greatest enemy is indifference. Not the evil behavior of evil people, but the indifference of good people to evil behavior. That is our greatest enemy. If we could get the good people who know the truth, who understand what's going on, to get up and finally do something, and finally decide that they're going to take a stand. Imagine what that would mean for the world. Imagine what we could do and imagine what we could be. If everybody who knew about injustice and who knew about the wrongs that are done in this world decided to do something about it. Imagine what a world this would be. Rabbi Kahana tried to wake us up and get us to be that type of people. And they murdered him. They banned him, they murdered him, they stopped him, they shut him up, they hated him. We have to pave the way to create a situation where the Jews will be a light unto the nations, where the Jews will be the force of morality and truth and justice and righteousness in the world, so that they can wake up those Gentiles as well who are moral and decent, but who are not acting for whatever reason and have to be awakened to act. That's our mission, to wake people up and to get them to act and to fight to make this a better world, to save Israel and save the Jewish people and wake Israel and the Jewish people up, because that's the number one battle. That's the number one battle. God's people have to get their act together first in order for the world to have a shot. In order for the world to have any hope, God's people first must get their act together. If God's people are doing terrible things, the world has no hope. And so that's our mission, that's our job. I'm happy to say again this week, tens of thousands are watching our videos in Israel. Are they going to do anything about it after seeing the videos? Is it really changing them? I don't know. But at least we're out there doing what we can to bring the truth. We have 5 Hebrew videos under advertising now. And again, tens of thousands are going to our videos. Our numbers are way up because of the virus, ironically. Because of the virus, so many people locked in their homes, and there's such a decrease in advertising that we are more prominent. Our videos are more prominent. And so, you know, we're actually reaching more people because of this. Of course, we don't want this to go on, the virus to go on, just so that we could have a bad... We're not like the news media that, for ratings, are willing to see everybody die and everybody be miserable and everything be horrible, just so that they could have their own little world improved with higher ratings. Of course, we are not like that. God forbid. But we are going to try to wake people up, whatever the situation is. That's what JTF is doing. That's what JTF stands for. That's what true Kahanism stands for. and Kahanism is genuine Torah Judaism. That's what we stand for, and that's why we were put into this world. If we work together as a team, we can make this a better world, and we can change Jewish history. For JTF, until next week, this is Chaim Ben Pesach. Shalom.